Welcome to Rethink Travel Podcast. I'm Natalie, your host, and this show is for conscious travelers, powered by Rethink Travel, a platform that aims to educate on sustainability and create a community of conscious travelers around the world. You will listen to conversations I had with hoteliers and people dedicated to make tourism better. So if you seek more from your travels than just a nice place to stay, let's get to the next story. My first guest is Dee Gibson. She's a British Sri Lankan interior designer and hotelier. She started the Calicanda House in 2016 in Sri Lanka, and she's going to tell us all about it.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Natalie. Thank you so much for having me.
So let's dive right into it and start with the story on how the Calicanda House was born.
Thank you. I'll try and keep it short because it's a relatively long-ish story, which started back in 2016. So I am a British Sri Lankan. I was born and raised in the UK, but I spent some time when I was little living in Sri Lanka with my grandparents. Back in those days when, you know, people were coming over from places like Sri Lanka and India to the UK, it was quite common practice to leave the kids at home because of the family network. So I spent some time with my grandfather there. I don't really have too many vivid memories, but I certainly have a feeling in my heart of what it was like to be in Sri Lanka. When I got married, roughly 20 odd years ago, I married an Englishman and we then went on to have kids. But as the kids were small and growing, I kind of thought, I really don't want to go to Sri Lanka yet to show them the island because I think I'm just not going to be able to make the most of it. So he had never been, and my children had never been until 2016. So it'd been a long time since I'd been back myself and traveled around. When we went, it was just really for a 2-week holiday for me to show my family their roots and their heritage. And they weren't necessarily very excited about coming. Certainly my children weren't, because they felt like they were missing out on holidays with their friends. But very quickly, everyone fell in love with the island. I mean, it's impossible to go to Sri Lanka and not fall in love with it. And I have a property developing past. I'm an interior designer in the UK, but I've done quite a lot of property developing as well. And halfway through the holiday, we started to have this conversation about whether we could buy a place there. You know, could we, should we, is it feasible, all of this kind of thing. And by the end of the holiday, that had become a very firm idea in my mind. And on the last day of this holiday, I found myself standing on this plot of land, which is now Calicanda House, absolutely rooted to the spot. It just felt like it was the most natural thing in the world. Honestly, to this day, I feel like I was meant to be standing on that land buying it. And put down a deposit, flew home and thought, right, that was the strangest experience. And what do we do now? And so I kind of didn't do any client work at all the following year. I have an interior design practice in London, stopped all my client work. And I spent the next year flying out to Sri Lanka and building Calicanda House. Initially, it was meant to be a place that the family would just travel back to, kind of our home in Sri Lanka, an excuse to keep going back. But as the build was taking place, you know, I started to realize that it's not so close. It's not like living in the UK and having a place in the country or even in France. And so I decided to take a much more commercial view of it. And actually, whilst I was building as well, I started to spend a lot more time on my own, not with my family, with the people out there. And I started to build relationships with the builders, the craftsmen. I was building relationships with the villagers. And I became really aware of the privilege that I had, essentially as a Western woman, even though I'm Sri Lankan, coming in and just buying this land. And the kind of disparity there was in my ability to do that as a woman, let alone a Westerner, compared to theirs. And so it became a much more commercial proposition. I upped the design spec. As a designer, it was going to be a way for me to showcase what I can do. But I also wanted to build sustainably, which I can tell you a bit more about a bit later. But I also wanted to make sure that I could give back to the local community. And by the time I'd completed the build, I had a very clear idea of what I wanted Calicanda House to stand for. So design led, because it's been built by an interior designer, but with a sustainable and social impact piece to it, because just as a human being, I understood that I needed to make the most of my privilege and be able to give back to the community.
That's a really beautiful story. Can you tell us about why you decided to put sustainability and local communities at the center of everything you did, and how you use natural materials to build the house? Tell me a little bit about this collaboration with local craftsmen.
Yeah, I'd love to. So, I mean, I was very lucky because I could take time off and basically oversee it all myself. The original plot of land had an old building on it it was dilapidated, but it had beautiful original old tiles and some old shutters and doors and all of that kind of thing. We couldn't use the old building because it was falling down. But what we did do was we stripped it of everything that we could reuse. So every single tile was taken aside. All the old shutters and doors were taken aside. And the new design for the new house was essentially using the original building as a inspiration, but kind of pumping it up, putting it on two levels, building verandas. And also I really wanted to build it in a traditional architectural vernacular. So I kind of built something that was reminiscent for me of my time in Sri Lanka, you know, back in the 60s and 70s with my grandfather. So we reused all of the old tiles, we reused the old doors and shutters, and we had new ones to match in sustainable local wood sources. So that was kind of what we started to put back into it. Then what I wanted to do was make sure that I furnished it with antiques and recycled pieces. I was never going to buy anything from the West and import it, which is what some people choose to do. That was not what I wanted to do. So I started to go looking at local antiques places, and I built up a couple of relationships with two amazing people who've run antiques businesses for years. And I would literally go foraging, you know, through the back of their shops and find these gorgeous old pieces that were painted and just needed a bit of love and attention, and then would work with them to sort of bring them back to life, you know, make sure they were working properly. And so whilst I was building the exterior, I could start to create the interior aesthetic. And I, you know, I am an interior designer, so luckily I could do that with some confidence in my own ability. But what I did find hard was, you know, I've been in the UK my entire life and working as a designer in London for 20 years. So I know where to go. And if I don't know where to go, I know who to ask. So going over to Sri Lanka was quite different, because suddenly it's like, okay, where do I look for these things? And when I was building, even just a few years ago, 5 years ago, antiques over there were really not that sought after. Everyone wanted modern. So the modern Sri Lankan likes a modern building with a modern aesthetic. And I was coming in trying to seek out the antiques and the old pieces. So anyway, I was lucky enough to find these guys. And then I was working with local craftsmen to build new pieces from scratch, but in an old vernacular. So we've got four poster beds that were built by these local craftsmen. It was working with them very closely. Even the pillars were built by hand. So that was an incredible journey for me, because it meant that I could create something that had a truly authentic feeling to it. And actually, soon after we opened, I can't remember who it was, but there was a Sri Lankan at the house, someone I didn't know. I think he might have been an official. And I think I was setting up some paperwork. And he said, "This is a really nice place. How old is this? Is it kind of, what, 100 years old or something?" I said, "No, it's 4 weeks old, actually. Thank you." But that was such a big compliment. And also, it was a way for me to be sustainable. I didn't want to do the whole importing thing, as I said. And then in terms of the local community, I recruited all my staff locally. And in fact, when we bought the land with the old bungalow on it, there was a caretaker who lived up the road, and he was a fisherman who'd lost his arm in a fishing accident. And so he was just kind of keeping an eye on the property to make sure that people weren't going to squat there and, you know, whatever. And when I took the place on and built, I kind of wanted to keep him on. So we sort of made up a job for him, you know, just to, and it's really important to me to make sure that, you know, all the staff in the house are locals. And as I said, to keep that sort of community spirit going, to feel like we're part of the community and not an intruder.
Beautiful. And talking about communities, you do work with a foundation called Their Future Today.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, how you work together and what they do exactly, and what's your involvement?
Yeah, definitely. I was really lucky because, as I said, I was very keen to make sure that we had some social impact. And at a random event in London, of all places, I was talking to someone and I said, you know, I really want to kind of find a charity that I can contribute some of our booking fees to, just to feel like I can start that process. And this lady said, I can introduce you to someone. So I was introduced to the founder of Zare Future Today. She's a British lady who set up the charity in 2004 after the tsunami. And essentially, it was initially set up as a very immediate reaction to raising funds to help people who'd lost their lives and their families and their homes. And what happened was, over the years, she built up a kind of a presence, relationships. And the story behind Zare Future Today is that in one of her trips after the tsunami, she was holding a baby and she was looking into this baby's eyes and really suddenly felt how awful it was for this child to have lost its mother, her mother. So she decided to keep the charity going in order to reunite families who'd been separated through poverty. And actually, the journey has been very organic. So in a nutshell, where we are today, what is it, 16 years later, 17 years later, is that the foundation does reunite families, is set up in order to help people who become homeless and are abused. But there is now a much bigger agenda in order to help with education, to change legislation, and ultimately to end institutional care. Because the basic premise of TFT is that children should be in loving homes, not orphanages. But of course, there's an ongoing piece from that, isn't there? It's okay, there's the home piece, but then how do we break the cycle of poverty? So there's lots and lots of things that TFT is doing. It's fantastic. And I now sit on the board of trustees as well. So, you know, offer as much time as I can and help with strategic thinking.
That's very nice. Where can we find more information? Do you have their website?
I can definitely share the information with you. And there's a link on the Calicanda House website as well. But hopefully you'll be able to share it with any of your listeners who are interested.
We'll definitely find the information in the podcast information. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about Sri Lanka, because I feel a lot of people in the world, travelers, tend to sort of link Sri Lanka to India because it's so close. But there is a real soul to the island. People in Sri Lanka are very proud of, you know, their island. It's beautiful. There's so much. How can you help listeners to really understand how they can embrace the real culture of Sri Lanka when they visit?
I agree. I think, as you say, anyone who goes to Sri Lanka really does fall in love with it. And I think for a number of different reasons. It's a small island that you can travel around in a relatively short space of time. But every part of the island is so different. There are mountains and beaches and elephants and surfing and food and tea plantations and different climates between east and west, north and south. So you can have the most incredible experience even just in 2 weeks. Add to that the people who are so warm and friendly and smiling and full of hospitality. And it really doesn't matter which end of the demographic spectrum they come from. They love having visitors. You know, Sri Lankans are very hospitable people. I think that I would say, as with travel to any part of the world, not just Sri Lanka, but I will focus just on Sri Lanka for the moment, is it is different from India because it is small. It's a lot less hectic. It's a little bit more relaxed. I would say that maybe some people who don't know Sri Lanka have the view that it's a sort of third world country that's a bit war-torn. I mean, it's amazing how many people ask me about the Tamil Tigers. If you say Tamil to them, they just say, oh, Tamil Tigers. You know, it's an association that hasn't left, which everyone is sort of trying to shake off, you know. So I think what we need to do is change that mindset and showcase our island in a way where people get to touch some skin, have conversations, you know, have real experiences. And that's one of the things that I want to encourage with Calicanda, and which is why the whole journey from potential just private home in Sri Lanka to commercial, you know, location is all about, for me, my own pride in my country. And being a British Sri Lankan in the UK, I think I probably got a little bit tired of that association with Tamil tigers and terrorism and war and all of that kind of stuff. And also a little bit tired of the association that Sri Lanka had as being kind of, oh, this poor little island that everyone had taken over. You know, we've been colonized by the Portuguese, the Dutch, the Brits, the Chinese have been after us, the Americans have been after us. And I feel like Sri Lankan people are very proud, as they should be, and they're innovative and creative and resilient. And there's so much to offer. So for people who go, I really hope that they would take the time to find someone who understands Sri Lanka, who is maybe someone who is as passionate about Sri Lanka as I am, where they can talk to them and say, tell me about Sri Lanka. Where can we go? What can we do? These are the ages of my children, or this is the age of my group, or those are my interests. And talk to people who can really introduce them to traveling around the island that's off the beaten track. And there are so many beautiful places to stay. I mean, yes, Kalakanda House is one of them, but there are so many beautiful places to stay. And I would encourage people to go and stay in beautiful designer destinations. And designer doesn't need to be luxurious, but something that's aesthetically pleasing and makes you feel comfortable, but also where you have the opportunity to speak to someone who can say, I'm going to take your hand and I'm going to take you out, and I'm not going to curate your experience so much that it becomes sanitized. I'm just going to encourage you to have these conversations with the locals and be a participant. I think it's easy for us to travel these days as observers and not as participants.
Absolutely. And Kalakanda House is definitely a great place to start. You do offer lots of experiences. We'll get to that in a few minutes. And as we talk about these experiences and dive a little bit into sustainability, as you mentioned, I would love to hear your definition of sustainability, how you see it. What does it mean to you and to Kalakanda House?
I think this is such a great question. Because, and the way you phrase it, what does it mean to you? I think that is absolutely a brilliant question, because it means so many different things to different people. I mean, sustainability, to sustain is to maintain something, is to keep something going, isn't it? And we all have our different pinch points. And I think a lot of people associate sustainability with green planet, eco-friendly, all of these things are so important that are absolutely at the top of the agenda. But I think also there is a big people part to it. People and planet, one does not exist without the other. They are not mutually exclusive. So for me and Kalakanda House, sustainability is probably more people-centric, because we're already making our own steps in order to be as eco-friendly and green as possible, which I hope that many other people who are building on the island will be doing too. But we need to start thinking about the people in the places that we travel to. And I think what's interesting is that we have a choice as travellers, as holiday makers, to demand more. And over time, especially here in the West, I think we've become lazy. There's so much choice. We can book online. We can do it without even thinking. And there's a lot of information being pushed at us. And we just take the lazy choice. What we should all be doing is demanding a lot more and asking a lot more. And as I said just a moment ago about speaking to a small, independent boutique agent that you can have a relationship with, who can press your buttons and say, what kind of experiences do you want? I think the more we demand, that will drive supply. And ultimately, what's being supplied at the moment is a mix of places who are really sustainable, either people, planet, or both. There's the other end of the scale where they don't care. It's just pile them high, sell it cheap, isn't it? And then there's a whole spectrum in between. And what we need to do is bring all of that together to make sure that we as suppliers are being able to offer more to people who want to come and stay with us. And it doesn't become a price sensitive decision. It's just a no-brainer decision.
Absolutely. And there is definitely a knowledge gap. I feel like travelers should definitely demand more and demand better. But this is also the reason of these conversations we're having, is because some of them don't even know what to demand. So the more we talk about type of travel, I think it will really help people understand what they should actually demand.
Yeah.
And obviously, a lot more than not having plastic straws at a property, you know, which is really what a lot of people think what sustainability is about. So I really like your views.
I'd like to just also add to that. I think it's difficult. We can't uninvent the wheel. We fly, right? We travel. We ask for various things. We can't uninvent the wheel. But I think the point I was trying to make was traveling sustainably, mindfully, experientially is a sexy thing. And I think that there is an association that it's, oh my God, I can't eat this, that and the other now. And I have to do everything by foot and I need to just wear hemp and, you know, sleep on the floor. It doesn't have to be like that. There are so many other choices. We can't uninvent the wheel. It's just really more about the choices that we make every day. And if we mindfully make those choices, then we're already doing it, aren't we? I mean, I know we've spoken before and you said you're very sustainable in just about everything you do. And it's just become a way of life now for you. It's absolutely not the same for everyone, is it?
No, absolutely. And we really hope that we can inspire more people, you know, to think this way. Because as I say very often, to be a conscious traveler, you have to be a conscious human. You know, it starts with what you do every day. And there is a disconnect between luxury properties or type of travel and sustainability. People think that it's one or the other. They cannot have both. We can definitely have both. And there are many properties around the world that prove it. So yeah, this is why, you know, obviously we've connected and I'm really glad we can talk about Killik in the House today, because I think you've been you're doing brilliant work and you live what you actually preach, which is exactly what we're always looking for. So, you know, I would like to actually get into what guests can do. What do you offer guests when they stay at Killik in the House? How do you guide them to, you know, embrace, you know, the local culture and how they can connect with local people? Do you teach them how to respect animals when they want to, you know, participate in activities that we do not consider ethical? I would love to hear about the guest experience at the Killik in the House.
We offer lots of experiences and I work with, apart from the ones that we can do on our doorstep where I have personal connections, which I'll talk about in a second, I work with people out in Sri Lanka who have the same values as us. So, of course, let's talk about elephants, for example. Elephants in Sri Lanka, I mean, they're kind of synonymous. And I know you're an elephant lover too. I love elephants. And everyone who wants to come wants to go and see an elephant. Absolutely, as they should. But there are places that are run, you know, which are really careful about nurturing the animals, looking after them, making sure that they're going to be protected, where guests can still have an amazing experience with them. And there are other places that just don't care. They've taken a commercial path. It's all about the dollar. They allow rides, you know, unacceptable. And so it's important to be able to guide guests without making them feel like you're beating them over the head with a stick. I mean, most people would make the right choice. Guide guests about, okay, if you want to go and see the elephants, then you need to go and see, you know, go with these guides in this direction. There's an elephant orphanage over here where they really look after the elephants. Please stay away from that place over there. So that's what we do when people ask us about the experiences that we offer. And like I was saying before, everyone who comes through Killik in the House deals with me in some way, shape or form. Every single person. Ultimately, they might then be introduced to others. But I will take that initial inquiry about what they're after. So therefore, I can find out what they're after, find out what they're about, find out the kind of people that they are. It's a little bit like designing, actually, and then trying to come up with a list of introductions and things like that. So from an island-wide experience, you can do safari, you can trek through the rainforest in Sinharaja. That, again, is with a local guide. You know, you get out on foot, you walk, you touch, you feel, you speak to people, you have conversations. It's really important to me to encourage people who come and stay to feel like they are in accommodation that's luxurious and comfortable and makes them feel safe. Safe enough for them to then trust me when I say, I invite you to go and speak to these people. I mean, even just, it sounds really, really basic, but just go and have conversations. Have a walk from Killik in the House and walk to Welagama town, but go down the old route and you'll go past a temple and you'll see people, you know, taking their cows along and you'll see villagers. Every time you see someone, just smile and say hello. If they talk to you, talk back. Do it on foot. one of the experiences that we have is we have an amazing chef and the food in Sri Lanka is fantastic. And invariably, there'll be people who'll say, I want to make that dish. And we can organize cookery classes at the villa. We eat seasonal food. I don't import anything from abroad. It's all Sri Lankan. But actually, what is even better is that our chef can offer cookery classes in his home in Salpe, which is just a few miles away. And he has a beautiful garden, which he's set up, a kind of an outdoor kitchen with a long stainless steel kind of chef's table. And I will say to people, yes, you can have a cookery class in the villa, but please go to his home and you can meet his family. I mean, it's not curated. You get to meet his daughters if they happen to be coming home from school at that time. If they're at school, you don't get to meet them. So none of it is curated in order to meet a local family. It's just him and his wife and his mother-in-law teaching you how to cook. People are coming and going. You're eating herbs from the garden, things like this. I think it's all about the emotion and the feeling. Whether I design an interior or I design an experience, a travel experience, it's all about making an emotional connection. And so all I say to our guests is, with every single experience you have, I'd really like you to have a conversation with someone. Learn a bit more about them. Tell them about yourself. As I said, be a part of the landscape rather than, and a participant rather than an observer, you know?
Definitely. And you know, I think you also in your description also described the perfect guests for Calica in the House. You know, we want people to be open-minded and curious and people to ask questions. And I mean, the conscious traveler we're talking about is this person. It is the traveler that wants to stay longer, that wants to learn about a culture. You know, food is a huge part of a culture. And, you know, always remember, I love what you said about, you know, guiding them to walk around and feel the island and feel the people. You know, let me also just plug in real quick, anywhere you are, if you want to take picture of local people, ask them first if it's okay to take a picture, you know, why you want to do it. That will also engage you into a conversation with local people. And you never know what will come out of it. Next thing you know, you're invited to have dinner at their house, or they will show you the back, you know, of their village, and some kind of new experience can come out of this. So it is definitely about respecting people. And this is what the conscious traveler is about. And this is definitely the type of guest, you know, we want to see at Calica in the House. For the people who are not really aware of, you know, how they can be a perfect guest, how do you think people can actually shift, you know, their mindset and thinking, what, you know, what tools can they use to, you know, if someone reaches out to you and is not your perfect guest, like, what do you do to help them understand to travel better to Sri Lanka?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think it's about having a conversation and finding out what it is people want. You know, we recently had this, started a conversation about the difference between holiday versus travel and how we're trying to kind of bring that whole thing into one sphere rather than dividing that attitude. And I think there are people who see a holiday in Sri Lanka as lying on the beach, drinking and eating a lot. Basically, if they get to see a little bit of the culture, great, but otherwise it's somewhere to go because it's, in inverted commas, and I'm doing my air inverted commas, a cheap place to go. And I think we really need to shift people away from that mindset and stop selling this concept of poor little nations that are cheap holidays and, you know, you can, your dollar goes a long way, and start thinking about the quality of the experience. So if you want to have a holiday because you're tired and you want to lie on a beach in Sri Lanka, then absolutely, by all means, do that. But please stay somewhere where you can talk to the people about, okay, maybe you don't like spicy food. You don't have to eat Sri Lankan food that's spicy. You can say to the chef or say to whoever is organizing your trip for you what it is you want, and they can tailor the food to your needs without compromising on their own sustainability measures or, you know, on their own standards. Have the conversations. It's really easy to speak to people. When I was traveling around in my 20s, way before the internet and way before travel flights were as cheap as they are, And I know interrailing still exists, but I went interrailing. And I know as a 20-something, it's different because you don't have much money in your pocket. But in some ways, not having money in your pocket to just throw at things as an expectation of spend made our trip so brilliant, because we were traveling on trains, we were sitting next to locals in Yugoslavia. I was in Yugoslavia before the war, and we were talking to soldiers before the war broke out. I was in Greece just as the national strikes were happening, and we ended up in Santorini because we overslept on a ferry. And it was all of these silly little experiences because we were curious and sort of not scared. I think people are scared to travel these days. They almost see what's on social media, or they listen to what's being, you know, like I said earlier, the stuff that's being pushed at us. Some people just believe everything they hear without being curious and saying, really? Because I want to kind of do it this way. Is there a way of traveling in a different way where I can speak to people, where I'm still safe? You know, there's a lot going on in the world, isn't there? That colours our vision of safety and all of this kind of stuff. So when people come to me and perhaps aren't the ideal clients for Calicanda House, I try and have that conversation with them about what it is they want. And if we're qualified out because of pricing or location or size or whatever, I hope that I then introduce them to people where they make the right choices about still being able to have an emotional experience in the island. And it's not just a take, take, take. It's a give, give, give as well. Think about what you're leaving behind. You know, all those people that you speak to when you're on holiday and you fly home, they're going to remember their conversation with you. And they're going to be talking to their friends in the village. They're talking to their friends at school, at work. I met this fantastic person from the UK or Switzerland or France or whatever. And hey, this is how they live over there. It's a cultural exchange. And I think we need to encourage more of that.
Absolutely. And especially now where, you know, this world is all about, I mean, it's very divided and it's all about pointing fingers and judging and everything. So these conversations where you actually listen to the person you're talking to are extremely important. And this is what we're pushing for. I mean, you, me, or, you know, everything, all these conversations we have together is really to, you know, start a movement of just better travelers.
I agree. And I think it also translates to every area of our life. It's, we need more human connection. I think we've just become so, I know this sounds daft, but we've become so remote from each other. And I'm guilty of it myself too. You know, I can lose myself in the social media hole for hours on end, or watch TV, or I'm tired, you know, life's busy or tired. You don't have the connections that we should do. But in everything we do, we should be talking to each other and making decisions in our lives that resonate with us, that make our hearts happy, that make us full of life, but also what we're giving back to other people. And I think that mass commercialization, high volumes, any kind of business that deals in these sort of large multiples takes you away from that human connection and leads us down the wrong path.
And I really like what you said about, you know, when a traveler flies back home, that the local Sri Lankan will remember that conversation. Well, hopefully that person flying back home will also remember that connection and you know, will have an emotional memory of it. This is what we're really hoping for. So, you know, I want to close our conversation asking about, you know, if you see some kind of shift happening in the younger generation of Sri Lankans, you know, as you said, the modern people, you know, now want to live in modern houses and not necessarily embrace. We've seen a shift in many countries. Did you see anything happening like that in Sri Lanka? Do you see, you know, more awareness on environmental issues and conservation or, you know, just even with communities? Like, I would love to have, you know, kind of a final hopeful word on the next generation of Sri Lankans and what you've witnessed.
Yeah, no, Sri Lankans are, I mean, they're still as creative and warm and hospitable as they ever were. I think the younger generations coming through are much more progressive in their thinking. They're very innovative. They want to see sustainable products coming through. They're very proud of the island. You know, what I also really celebrate is that, you know, 20, 30 years ago, there were very limited concepts of what was an acceptable career. And Sri Lankans put education above everything else to this day. But historically, if you weren't a doctor, an accountant or a lawyer, you sort of weren't really going to be going many places, and creatives were very much kind of put to the side. What I love as a creative myself is seeing this. This has completely changed. Sri Lankans celebrate creativity. They love their architects and designers and fashion designers and people who create amazing dishes. So from that perspective, there's much more of a positive global influence, much more towards equality. But I think there's a long way to go. I see that very much in the cities and the big towns. But I think that in the remote villages, we're still potentially have some work to do to be able to create more parity between the different groups. But yeah, definitely. I mean, the younger generation now is, you know, watch that space. Sri Lanka is so creative, and it's so amazing how such a small island can have so many people across the world. You know, Sri Lankans are everywhere in a good way.
Nice. Is there anything you wanted to add about Calican the House or about Sri Lanka? Something I didn't ask and you wanted to address? You know, what do you want people to remember when they think about Sri Lanka or Dee or Calican the House?
Yeah. Oh, I would hope that anyone who has had dealings with Calicanda House or myself, either personally or through your podcast, would associate us with a very sort of human-led business. I'm a designer. I've built a beautiful villa, and I take pride in the fact that I did that. It looks fantastic. But what I want is for people to know that when they're coming to stay at Calicanda House, they're dealing with Dee. They're dealing with her associates who are just as passionate about creating something bigger and more beautiful. So you're going to remember where you're staying, but you're also going to remember the people that you met, and you're going to have a luxury time, but I think luxury in a different way. Luxury because you have time to explore. You've had someone who's been looking after you. You know you're doing it sustainably. You know that some of your, you know, fees are going towards their future today and you're giving back. I just want us to be associated with a very emotional, positively emotional experience. And hopefully as an example of how to travel and how to have a holiday.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Dee. I really could go on for hours talking about, you know, your passion for the house and for the people in Sri Lanka. Thank you so much for being on the Conscious Traveler podcast.
I loved it. Thank you so much for having me, Natalie. It was a brilliant chatting to you. Thank you.
And you will find all the information on Calicanda House, on their future today, and all the information you need from Dee. You will find everything in the show notes.
Thank you for spending your time with us today. Find us on Instagram, re.think.travel, to stay up to date with our news. We will be back very soon with a new episode, so don't forget to subscribe. Have a great day.